I am Gaius, John Bassler. Germanicus Machiavellius is here. The centurions are restless. Okay, gentlemen, we're taking you to the winter of 1641-42. In this very spot, I'm not exactly sure from where we're sitting by the Thames, where Whitehall was. This is the old palace of Whitehall, burned down in 1698, but we're going to 1641-42. I'm not at all sure where the boundaries of Westminster are here in Londinium. They're nearby. But imagine you're in a time machine and we accelerate from here, first century AD, 91, to 1641-42. The king is Charles I. Parliament, the Long Parliament, is in revolt from the failures of Charles I, who's seen as a foreigner. The court is divided between those who are loyal to the king and those parliamentarians who are loyal to the Constitution, the British Constitution, the English Constitution. This is part of the transformation from the empire that we exist in and built in Rome and the empire that the English enjoy in the 18th and 19th century and that America inherits in the 20th and 21st. This is a transformation process. Along the way, there were huge, huge threats, big risks, and regicide. We're speaking of regicide. The death of Charles I in 1649 was a significant event in the transformation of an empire, an aristocracy and an autocracy, into a republic with democracy. Right there, that regicide. But before 1649, before the Civil War broke out, and we had the Royalists, the Cavaliers fighting the Parliamentarians, the Puritans, it was maneuvering between Parliament and the King. Now, why I tell this story to the centurions is we had a vote a few days ago in the American Empire, a midterm, not even really a full midterm. Governor of Virginia, governor of New Jersey, a lot of smaller posts across the nation. But the vote was heavily against the emperor, heavily, more than they needed. These are all blue states, but many more than they needed, times more than they needed. There was an eagerness to vote that was overwhelming, couldn't wait. And the repudiation is being talked about every day in the columns. And my vision, Germanicus, is that the emperor is not listening, as Charles I didn't listen to the Long Parliament, and that what's building here is regicide. We know that the Parliament in the hands of, or the Congress in the hands of the Democrats, will impeach, 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 impeach. Right now, however, domestically, we have a scenario that is very credible. A governor, a blue governor, defies the order of the president to stand back and let ICE conduct its business. A blue governor, not a big state, not Newsom or Pritzker, some other smaller state. That governor refuses and is detained by the federal authorities, jailed even, or house arrested. That leads to a rage among the Democrats, a vote getting that dwarfs anything they've had before. This is not unlike the South Carolina condition against Andrew Jackson, not unlike the whole of the South, Virginia, to the Confederacy, to Abraham Lincoln. Defy the federal government by asserting the power of a governor. The vote goes enormously in favor of the Democrats, and they suddenly dominate the Congress. At that point, the Long Parliament is sitting. And the emperor is not listening, Germanicus. That's my concern. As Charles didn't listen, the emperor is not listening. I don't know that there's a way out of this, because at each time Charles made a concession, Parliament got stronger. I don't know if he could have stopped it. He could have left the country. He could have done that. That wasn't possible for him. So how do we get off this escalator to regicide, Germanicus?
Well, I think one way to, if not comfort ourselves or reassure ourselves, one pathway of thought that we can go down is to compare the situation in England and its unification with Scotland on a dynastic level at that time, was that, and you mentioned the Long Parliament, but before that was the Parliament that was suspended. And Charles had suspended the Parliament for 11 years, and which is amazing, and ruled by himself and did so poorly. And he eventually had to go back to Parliament to sort of get him out of the fix he was in up in Scotland, where, the Bishops' War. Actually, there were two Bishops' Wars. And so there was this long precedence. And I think we can see the same long precedence, not quite as long, with Mr. Trump going back to 2016. So in many ways, you have a comparison there. The difference is that the stumbles, if you want to be diplomatic, made by Charles were huge. And frankly, the stumbles made by a president in terms of wars and situations that the U.S. can't get out of are the hallmark of the previous administration under Mr. Biden, with the war in Ukraine, the exit from Afghanistan, screwing the relationship with China at the very beginning of the administration, et cetera, et cetera. And that hasn't happened yet with Mr. Trump. I think, as I mentioned in our last segment, Trump could do that by bobbling and tripping over the situation regarding Ukraine. But that's hypothetical. Now, the other thing is that there has to be a situation that breaks the Constitution. And if a governor breaks the Constitution by refusing to let ICE in, that would require the use of some kind of force. It wouldn't be, the marshals and the other parts of DHS, ICE, and they all come in, including reservists or National Guard. I mean, that they have to be stopped with some sort of force, and that would be a confrontational moment that would look very much like an insurrection, the sort of thing that happened in the earliest days of the Republic, in Shay's Rebellion and the Whiskey Rebellion. And if the American people suddenly saw this as a red flag of impending civil war, it isn't certain how things would break. If you had some firebrand of a governor who did this and who took enormous risk by you know, essentially, you know, starting an insurrection, then Americans might pause and say, if Mr. Trump used force and there was an unpleasant episode or event, then things might go very much against the president. On the other hand, if the governor who is undertaking this risky course looks like he's about to start a spiral or cascade of unraveling the American Republic itself, I don't know that Americans would really back that at all. So it's a far cry to say, oh, we like Mondami in New York. And to have a governor, on the other hand, who actually literally went to war with the president. So it's hard to let's take Pritzker and Newsom. I mean, their defiance is purely rhetorical. It's grandstanding for effect to help position them for nomination in 2028. And I'm not sure how far even those two men will go, but they certainly will push things. But I don't think they want to put at risk their potential candidacies and future by really ripping apart or shredding the Constitution.
When Charles went looking for the six he denounced as traitors, he took along with him a number of dukes, and they went east first in London because they were calling on their allies in the city. Mm-hmm. Everybody in London thought they were going to put them in the Tower, these six favored dukes and barons. And there was panic in the city, and everybody reached for a weapon.
Right.
So misperception is part of the scenario, Germanic.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you see this now with the government shutdown. I mean, everyone, the Democrats have managed to massage this in such a way that it appears to many Americans that this is the president's fault, whereas it's truly the Democrats doing.
But I'm reminding both of us that you're not, there's no evil mastermind here. Things get out of control.
Right. Right.
And a defiance, I think it'd be a small state, Virgin Islands, Nevada. Because immediately the governor put him in chains, take him into the Tower, whatever that is in the U.S., right? You will back down. He would immediately, or she would immediately, become number one as a candidate for 28. Number one, shooting past Newsom and Pritzker. And then it'd be a competitive rhetoric going on in all the capitals.
Yeah.
This happened with Andrew Jackson. And he said, nullification. He said, I'm going to come down there and hang the first man I find, the first tree I can find. And it worked. But it didn't work when Lincoln tried it in 61. And defiance by states is something we're all familiar with. It's going on right now. You're right that Pritzker and Newsom are using rhetorical defiance, but that's an escalator, Germanicus.
Oh, sure it is. But there has to be a leader who's willing to take the ultimate risk. Okay, the ultimate risk is not his jailing. The ultimate risk is that, you know, he becomes a traitor and Americans deeply disapprove of his actions and condemn him. Now, I don't see politicians anywhere close to the mettle of Andrew Jackson. I mean, Andrew Jackson hung a couple Brits who were causing problems in Florida. He basically started the war that allowed Florida to become part of the U.S. He was a savage commander in the wars, the Seminole Wars, and then the Trail of Tears. You know, that is a kind of person that I don't see. I mean, the man who comes closest to that is Mr. Trump, but he's nowhere near what we saw with Andrew Jackson. And you look at these paper tigers like Newsom and Pritzker, and then the factota that are the governors of very small states and the Commonwealth and other forms of affiliation with the U.S. They're not going to do that. I just cannot see that.
Okay, I'm not selling it as inevitable. I'm saying that they didn't see it either in 1642. They didn't see it.
Right. Right. Well, I think you could have the confrontation. I think it would be enough to have high-level confrontations. As we were talking earlier, entre nous, there were provocations before Fort Sumter that did not lead immediately to civil war, that both sides decided not to pursue. And yet those provocations escalated until they reached a point where there was an exchange of fire, mostly on the Confederate side, a bombardment of Fort Sumter, and that was it. But you could have, for example, a governor like Pritzker who decides to confront ICE and essentially has the, say, Chicago police stand down or even support demonstrators who are going after ICE. So the demonstrators, I call them demonstrators, the rioters, led by Antifa and funded by Democrat donors at the highest level, they can be allowed to do the damage, and then the police do nothing. That means that Mr. Trump would have to call in the National Guard, and doing so would then make Trump look like Mr. Trump look like a tyrant, and that's exactly what they want. So I think it's possible, if they were adroit enough, to maneuver the president into doing something that would be visually stupid. You know, however, I have to say, you know, both Kennedy and Eisenhower sent in the National Guard very aggressively during their administrations, and that went well, partially because they were popular presidents, but they nonetheless went in forcibly in places like Little Rock. So it depends on how it is handled. And so far, the Democrats have been more aggressive and have managed to turn things that should have gone against them in their favor. They're the party out of power is going to be more aggressive. Well, I mean, we saw the inverse occur under Mr. Biden, because the red was able to turn the situation at the border into a crisis, and Americans bought that narrative.
Germanicus, one more try. After the vote in 26, January of 27, the new Congress sits. Any incident, and it doesn't have to be as romantically over the top as I'm speculating, any incident at all will drive that congressional vote
right
heavily blue. And at that point, it'll be the executive versus the legislative. And we won't have an easy time anywhere. There'll be 2 years of Washington warfare. Any trigger at all at that moment would lead to Congress taking on the president directly with impeachment and trial.
Well, I mean, if we're just looking at the scenario that we were talking about, where you have escalating provocations, those provocations would be sufficient, if they're handled properly by blue, to get a good outcome in the election. And then what the president had already done in sending in the National Guard and troops would be the foundation of an impeachment and trial.
And back to first war. We can't see it. You can't see it. What's going to happen is history, because we can't see it. We can't predict it. Accidents and happenstance and luck. We both agree that if this, then that.
Right. And
what I'm hearing from the White House, from the Emperor, from the palace, is that Tuesday didn't matter. I say it did. There were too many blue votes.
Well, not just blue, but there were independents, quote unquote, who decided they didn't like Trump enough and what he's been doing to vote against him. I mean, that you saw that shift in Virginia, because Trump carried Virginia in the general. But
I that's it. That's all I've got. Because I'm reading 1641, 1642, it occurred to me, hey, they didn't see this.
Well, this gets back to the fix that Charles was in. He was in a fix so deep and was so desperate for money and was so shamed by the defeats that the Scots had inflicted on him. And then Ireland, which was the proximate cause for his going back to Parliament, he needed to make some accommodation and compromise, and he didn't. And so we know that Mr. Trump is not the kind of guy who will compromise. He'll think, I've got to fight harder. And that could push things over the edge, because he definitely won't compromise. And he may not hold back in a hypothetical situation where a governor devise him in a serious way. And, you know, he would not be, he would not appreciate the possibility that his sending in the guard or, you know, whatever force was required, right, how that would turn Americans potentially against him and give the cudgel, as it were, to Blue.
I back off. I'll leave it alone. Although I do mention Henrietta Maria, otherwise known as Lady Macbeth, whispering in Charles' ear. And there's someone named Loomer who would make a wonderful Lady Macbeth.
She's not Catholic, but I guess she'll do.
Charles would go back to Whitehall thinking he was going to get some rest, and she would go, "Poltroon!" His wife would be yelling at him, "Poltroon!" All right, fine. We're going to turn to just a moment of considering autocracy versus democracy when we come back. Friends of History Debating Society, the Centurions wanted to hear the payoff, and we don't have it for them, Germanicus. We're staring into the future, and we can't see it. We can only see to where we are. This is Friends of History Debating Society. We'll be right back.